I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, May 11th. In 1864, Confederate General Jeb Stuart, one of the most gifted cavalry commanders for the South, is fatally wounded by a Union soldier in the Battle of Yellow Tavern, just 6 miles from Richmond, Virginia, less than a year before the end of the Civil War. Robert E. Lee had considered Stuart one of his best officers and relied on him heavily throughout the four-year conflict. In 1934, a massive dust storm sweeps across the Great Plains of the United States, causing what would later be termed the Dust Bowl, that prompted tens of thousands of people to leave their homes and farms and travel west to find a better life, an event captured eloquently in the novel The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. And in 1969, American troops fight a bloody series of skirmishes against North Vietnamese forces in and around the mountainous region called Ap Bia, near the border with Laos during the Vietnam War, the conflict engaging U.S. paratroopers from the 101st Airborne Division, along with South Vietnamese soldiers, who later gained control of the mountain in one of the most heralded engagements of the war, later portrayed in a popular film. Most people who know the village of Chadds Ford think of the Brandywine River Museum of Art, the home to hundreds of paintings from the Wyeth family of artists, Howard Pyle, and others. A good friend of the Wyeths, Chris Sanderson, lived right up the road just off of Baltimore Pike, a short walk from Hegg's Place, the popular restaurant where friendly people meet and hungry people eat. Sanderson was a teacher, musician, and lecturer, but the moniker he cherished most was that of historian. Chris loved to speak about the heritage of the Brandywine Valley and the important role the area played during the Battle of the Brandywine. Sanderson was also a collector of historical artifacts, and after he passed away in 1966, Andrew Wyeth, Tommy Thompson, and others converted the home where he lived into what is now the Christian Sanderson Museum. The museum contains over 18,000 artifacts from more than 250 years of American history, dating from the late 1700s up through the 1960s, including cannonballs from the Battle of the Brandywine, Civil War memorabilia, a piece of the bandage wrapped around President Lincoln's head after he was shot, lovely original sketches and paintings by the Wyeths, as well as other artists, and much more. It's a wonderful place for people of all ages to take a walk through history. Today we're talking with Chuck Ullman, the curator of the collection there at the museum. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, Chuck, you're the curator there. How long have you been there, and tell us a little bit about your responsibilities at the museum.
Okay. I started as a volunteer in 2002 and became the curator in 2006. Thompson was asked me to take over for him as he was starting to have some medical issues. I actually really waded into it when I retired from Wyeth Laboratories in 2008. Mm-hmm. As far as my duties go, I'm responsible for the organization and maintaining of the collection, as well as these days the building that it's in, to make sure that everything stays the way it should. And that's not exactly a trivial undertaking, but it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work. Just for full disclosure to our audience, I am a volunteer at the museum. I'm also on their board, and I have been involved with the museum for the last six, 7 years now. I've even mentioned it in a couple of my books that I've written about the area. You know, the Sanderson Museum opened in 1967, a year after Chris passed away, and artists Andrew Wyeth and Tommy Thompson were highly involved. Tell us a little bit about the beginnings of the museum.
As you said, Chris passed away in November of 1966. In February, Andrew Wyeth spoke with Tom Thompson and said, here's the keys to the building, go in and document it. So that's what Tom did. Tom being a photographer, as well as working for, at the time, he was already working for SRAM in Westchester there. So we went in and took pictures of everything. And as you can imagine, it was a, if any of you have heard about Chris, he kept everything and the place looked like it. Anyway, he documented it, and then later on in that month, they began to work on cleaning everything out and seeing what they could keep and what they couldn't keep. It took them better part of about 2 years before they finally were able to reopen any of the rooms, and that was in approximately 1969. There was the four founding members. In addition to Andrew, there was also Arthur Beard, William Hoffman, who eventually owned the mill, which became the Brandywine River Museum, Frank Rich, and then Tom Thompson, who was, I don't believe he was on the board at that time, but he did become the curator. Mm-hmm. So they worked on it and got it all put together. The room slowly opened. Everything that you see, the way it's organized, pretty much was designed by Tom Thompson. He did a spectacular job. So that's where we're at, and pretty much the way it looked then, a lot of the items are still there, but we're moving a few things around every so often, if not the least of which, because we're trying to bring in the building up and get it in better condition to maintain the collection, so some things had to move.
Absolutely. You know, I've walked through the museum many times, and every time I go there, I see something that I never noticed before. There's so many things to see. And by the way, it was a pleasure speaking with and interviewing Tommy Thompson, which I did for my book on the museum, which is there at your display. And Tommy is just was just a wonderful gentleman. He just passed away about, was it a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Yes, yes.
And he was about 95 years old. I wanted to get his story on the record, his personal thoughts and insights into parts of the collection. And it was just a pleasure speaking with Tommy, just a wonderful man. Chris Sanderson was apparently pretty close to the entire Wyeth family. N.C. Wyeth, the famous illustrator at the turn of the last century, Andrew and Jamie Wyeth. Jamie is now, I think, in his late 60s. Why do you think Chris was so close to the family?
Well, I think part of it was their common interests in history. N.C. was the same age as Chris, both born in 1882, but they both were interested in the history of the area. They both were interested in the Revolutionary War, which got them involved with the Brandywine battlefield and that type of thing. And then Andrew was interested in the local area as well. Plus, he and Chris got together on several projects, and sometimes, in fact, for example, there was a book called the Brandywine Book of the Rivers of America series, and Chris served as the historical consultant for that.
Mm.
And also NC and the Wyeth families and the Sanderson families got together many times on holidays. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Sanderson would help out with the kids, because when you have an army of kids like NC did, mm-hmm. sometimes you need another set of hands when everybody might be sick or something along that line.
Absolutely. You know, NC and Andrew both focused on historical themes for at least part of their works. I'm not sure that Jamie focused quite as much on historical themes, more rural landscapes and things like that. Specifically with NC and Andrew, what do you think their link was with history that Chris found so interesting? I mean, was it just the Battle of the Brandywine? Was it just a fascination with American heritage?
I think it was a fascination with American heritage because NC did many, many illustrations for a number of books that had items, both fiction items like Robinson Crusoe and other ones that were related to the history. And Andrew did items related to history as well. And in fact, probably one of the more interesting items that we have in the museum is that map of historical Chester County. And it was Chris's idea of who should be on it, but Andrew did all the drawing on it. And he obviously, I don't think, would have kept going at it if he hadn't enjoyed it some and was having fun doing it.
Yeah, that map, the historical map of Chester County, is really outstanding. It's available for sale at the museum. It was basically designed and created physically created by Andrew Wyeth when he was only about 20 years old. And then Chris was the, so to speak, historical consultant. It's just a wonderful map of the area. So anyone who has an interest in collecting artifacts with a little bit of an historical touch to it, I think you'd really enjoy the map.
Yeah, the concept for it came from Chris in terms of, based on some of his lectures. He used to give a lecture on historic Chester County, historic Delaware, and he tried to get people into it. And then that's how the two of them together decided how they wanted it to be laid out and what pictures they wanted to put around the outside edge of famous people that were related to Chester County. Some of them weren't actually born there, but they came to the area and were famous for it, like Buffalo Bill Cody, mm-hmm. because he had relatives that lived both in Westchester and Coatesville, and he visited a number of times.
Mm-hmm. Chris loved to talk about history, really any aspect of our history, and he collected just thousands and thousands of items highlighting our past. I think there's, you mentioned to me at one point, there's over 18,000 artifacts in the total collection.
Well, I use the number 15,000, but what's 3,000, you know? We're still within orders of magnitude, and we have about 1,500 groups of items on display, and we have roughly 20 to 25,000 items in our library. A lot of photographs, letters, booklets, correspondence, that type of thing. And it's actually it's available for people who want to do research. In fact, we participated in a program called the Hidden Collections Initiative. It was run by the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, and it was funded by the Andrew Mellon Foundation. And it allowed for museums like us, on all-volunteer operation with no full-time staff, to get their information summarized and put into a database of historic spots in the five-county area here and around Philadelphia, so people know what we have. And that has directed some people to us, which we're very pleased that we were able to participate in that.
That's fascinating. And just for our listeners, when you come to the museum, there are so many things to see. There's what I think it's 8 different rooms throughout the whole building,
plus the autograph hallway.
Right. So I mean, there's just many, many different things to see, dating back from the early Republic era up through the 1960s. One of the most fascinating things I think is the letter collection, which includes a letter from the gentleman, the soldier, who took down the flag at Fort Sumter, which was officially the start of the Civil War. You have a letter which is part of that record, and we're just about to take a break, but Chuck, could you comment on that letter and some of the other things in that collection?
Well, that particular part of the collection is related to his communications with Grand Army of the Republic members who were Union soldiers. It was like an American Legion thing, but it was for Civil War soldiers. And we also have collections of pictures of him and during the years. We also have items related to the Pocopson Valley Boys and different groups. We have many, many different types of collections along that line. Many letters. There's all kinds of things about setting up events and his work on with the Battle of the Brandywine and some of the work he did there. Probably wasn't honored as well as he should have been until after he passed away, but did that kind of thing.
There are so many things there to see in the collection, and I encourage people to visit it. We're about to take a brief break, but we'll be back with Chuck Ullman from the Christian Sanderson Museum.
Honey, we need
a springtime getaway.
A springtime getaway. Somewhere with
amazing food.
Amazing food. And
cozy couples lodging.
Right, but not too far away or
Gettysburg.
Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Okay, but I want
award-winning golf courses.
Horseback riding.
A Firkin Festival.
How do you know all of this?
They have an app.
They have an app?
Yep, at destinationgettysburg.com.
So, Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Gettysburg, PA. Make your own history.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website, at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? G.P. Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
This is the Talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
And this is Living History. We're talking with Chuck Ullman, the curator of the Christian Sanderson Museum in Chads Ford, Pennsylvania. Chuck, when people come to the museum, they'll see thousands of items in eight different rooms and your historic hallway upstairs. Let's just discuss the first one they see, the battlefield room. What are some of your favorite things in there?
In the battlefield room, I think one of the most interesting items is the purse that belonged to Jenny Wade. She was the only civilian killed at the Battle of Gettysburg. Her sister, who married General McClellan, met Chris at the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg and was so impressed by him that she felt that he would be a good person to take care of that purse. So she sent it to him, and it's a key part of our Civil War collection that we have there. I also like the newspaper talking about Abraham Lincoln on his after he was assassinated and his trip into the Philadelphia area. I find that interesting. I enjoy the blue hen drumhead that's on the wall, somewhat related to the Battle of Brandywine. Mm-hmm. That's sort of an interesting piece. The sign that N.C. Wyeth painted that Chris used to put out in front of Washington's headquarters at what is now the Brandywine Battlefield State Park. It was on two sides. One side, it's very clear. The other side, it looks really rough. And NC did that on purpose to make it look old. I enjoy that. We have a silhouette picture of George Washington, and it's always crooked, and I can always tell when somebody has moved it because they can't get used to seeing it crooked, so somebody has to straighten it. That's our fun piece. And I think the other thing that I like in there, which is really not battlefield related, is the portrait of Chris that Andrew Wyeth did in 1937. But there's a lot of items in there, a lot of fun, but those are just some of the items that I enjoy in that room.
Yeah, that painting of Chris was apparently so beloved by his mother, Hannah. She used to brag it to anybody she met and said, hey, let's go see the painting. It's just a wonderful painting. The other painting in that room, which is actually one of my very favorites at the museum, is Soldiers by the Hundred Were Passing by N.C. Wyeth. Which is a Civil War scene. So that's a really lovely room and with a lot of fascinating things. Tell us a little bit about what's called the Autograph Hall upstairs.
Chris, from the time he was at the Normal School, which is now Westchester University, I'm not sure how long, at least into the 50s anyway, loved to collect autographs, and he would either get them by writing letters or he would send somebody with an autograph book, and they would collect the items for him, or if he couldn't get them himself. There's about five or six different groups of them. There's presidential signatures. There's military signatures, both generals from Civil War through even World War II. There's other famous people, there's musicians. They're all grouped in different areas, and you can see them up there. We even have signatures from Geronimo on It's on a cabinet card in the one case. Mm-hmm. Those are just a sample of them. We have approximately 1,500 in the collection. Mm. And those are available for review by appointment if somebody's interested in studying those.
Now, fascinating autographs and also signed photographs by many famous personalities. Some of my favorites are, there's a short note from Alexander Graham Bell. There's also an autograph by Orville Wright, John Wanamaker, just literally dozens and dozens of well-known statesmen.
Don't forget one of my favorites, Thomas Edison.
Edison, yes. I mean, every time I walk through Autograph Hall, again, it's just like looking at the different artifacts. I see some autograph I never noticed before. It's really fascinating. The fact that he was a fiddler Chris was had a band called the Pocatson Valley Boys, and he even played, I guess, in the Cantini at the Academy of Music, I guess the basement there. Tell us a little bit about his musical career.
Chris had already learned to play the fiddle while he was still in high school, and he continued to play it, and even into the he started orchestras in the various schools that he was at, and he would teach fiddling. And even after he stopped teaching, he continued to play the fiddle. He was first in a small group called the Delmarvins for a couple years, and they played with him. But then he started his own band, the Pocatson Valley Boys, and they played all over the place. And Chris kept records of everything, and we have all the registers. And he'd have little notes in there about how much they made, and or personally would say something, the person wouldn't even pay him for the practice or something like that. All kinds of funny little notes about what went on with the different events. But they played all over the place. We actually, in a display we're getting ready to put on, we actually have a picture of the band playing in the studios at WDEL at the time in Wilmington. And it was part of what they used to call a DX, or a long-distance broadcast. They did it in the middle of the night, and they would play to get people to send in postcards saying how far the signal went so they could hear what was going on. This was in, I think the first one of these they did was sometime in the 20s.
Oh, my Lord. I know he was also on, is it WCOJ?
His initial show, other than just one-time shots, started with WDEL in Wilmington. He was there from 1930 till, I believe, around 1940. He started broadcasting at WCOJ in Coatesville in 1947, and he continued broadcasting up until the week before he passed away. Although that was on tape, but still, he continued to record the shows, and he always had one. He had two or three there sitting on tape, so if all of a sudden, for some reason, he couldn't make it there, he could call them up and say, put the tape on, and he would be off to do something else.
Now, does your storehouse there have all the tapes of his shows?
We have some audio tapes of them, not all of them. It's like everything else. Some things just got up and wandered away. Mm-hmm. We have it. One of our projects that we'd love to do sometime, hint, hint, I'm looking for volunteers.
I may have to help you.
Yeah, we'd love to get that data off of audio tapes like cassettes and that kind of thing into some kind of a digital media so that we know they would be preserved better than they are now, because it's they are getting to the age where we're going to start having problems with them, as everybody else that has a lot of audio tapes around. So it would be wonderful if we could do that. But we have a fair number of them. I think we have about 30 tapes roughly, maybe even a few more than that. I'm looking up at the boxes right now. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the boxes I have at home, and I'm doing some work on it, but there's others. In fact, I'm just looking over. I see two boxes with, that say, from the radio broadcasts that he did when he in Coatesville. So
now, are these all cassettes, or are there some reel-to-reel?
There's a few reel-to-reel. The reel-to-reels are primarily related to lectures that he gave in different areas, in different schools or different organizations, that type of thing. The cassettes, for the most part, are related to the radio show, and also there was some attempt to convert some of the old tapes onto cassettes as well.
Mm-hmm. The Pocatson Valley Boys, they actually cut an album, right?
They did, and we do have some CDs of that for sale. Although the best thing to do if you're interested is make sure you contact the museum, because we sort of make them as we go.
Sure. Now the music, I guess you could describe as kind of country folk music.
Well, I think the best way to describe it is that he had like country, like barn dance music, and then he had square dance music, but he also played popular music, or what we call swing music at the time. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of that, especially when he was playing at the in the USO clubs in Philadelphia. He started there in 1942, I guess it was 43 rather, and continued till the USO clubs from World War II closed in Philadelphia in 1947, primarily at what was the Stage Door Canteen, which was in the basement of the Academy of Music. And he also played at what used to be called the Central City YMCA, both downstairs and even sometimes on the roof there.
Oh my Lord. You know, when people wander upstairs at the museum, they can see a lot of different things, including some paintings and sketches from the Wyeth family, and also Peter Hurd. Tell us, why is Peter Hurd there in the collection?
Peter Hurd was a rather persistent upcoming artist who wanted to be one of NCYS students, and he probably was one of the earliest ones. I would have to check the timeline on all of that, but he was one of NC's students, and he also, Chris, tutored two of his children, and they seemed to get around. We have pictures of in our collection, like, for example, one showing Peter doing some rope work, you know, swinging it around his head and with a lariat and things like that, and I think primarily it was because of they became friends. Chris would like to go over and see what he was doing, and I'm sure Andrew probably wore a rut in the ground between their house and where the herds were living. Mm-hmm. And we believe that that's probably why some of the items came to it. Either we have a number of items by Peter Hurd, plus Henriette was married Peter, and we have one of her paintings in the Brandywine room as well. But I think it was just because of relationship with the Wyeth, and also because Chris helped with tutoring.
Now, the name Peter Hurd brings me always to one thing, the Chads Ford Barbershop sign, which is in the same room where you feature much of Hurd's collection. And for people who don't know about this, this is the most famous barbershop sign in the area. It was painted by N.C. Wyeth, correct?
That's correct.
Back around, it was up since around 1926 or so more than 90 years. And it says, this is where Washington and Lafayette got a very close shave. That's a beautiful sign. It's very rustic, and it's right upstairs, the first room you come to. So if anybody wants to see an historic barbershop sign, which is absolutely lovely, go upstairs at the museum.
Actually, it brings up the point. It's one of the few items that are here in the collection that either Chris didn't get on his own, or he gave something to somebody and they gave it back to him. Besides the barbershop sign, we have some illustrations of the museum downstairs on the first floor as you come in. Mm-hmm. But everything else in here is either Chris collected it or somebody who got it from Chris gave it back to us, and we're very strict about maintaining that collection policy because we don't have a whole lot of room.
Sure. Yeah. What are your personal favorite items in the entire collection?
Well, as far as pictures that show Chris in it, I really like I think my favorite one is the Barclay Ribbon Camp sign up on the second floor, showing Chris standing there in a raincoat with his scowl on his face, as we see in some of the pictures. Mm-hmm. I also like the one that Andrew did of him. Both of the ones he did there, the country schoolmaster one, and also the portrait downstairs in the battlefield room. Mm-hmm. I love the remembrance case there in the collection that's up in the one room, has all these items that Chris collected over the years. The guest registers in the one room that where all three generations of Wyeth doodled in them. The Jenny Wade purse, obviously, is, I find that very, very interesting and unique. Those are just a few of the ones that I can think of right off that I scribbled down here that I can think about. But
those are all wonderful.
There's so many I could go on for hours.
Oh, yeah, and walking through the museum, you just get a glimpse of some of these just fantastic things there. We're a little short on time. We're about to take our break, but the museum has things of interest to all ages. I know you do get school groups there, and you're also having a special event next week with Andrew Wyeth's granddaughter, Victoria Wyeth.
Yeah, we're pleased that event was sold out, but we will be opening a new an exhibit called Simply Sanderson starting next Thursday.
Excellent, excellent. Now, the website, is it sandersonmuseum.org?
That's correct.
And best time to visit is, I guess, March through December, and you're open Thursdays through Sundays. And for anybody who likes to visit the Brandywine Valley, you really ought to stop in and see this little gem of a museum just up the road from the Brandywine River Museum. It's absolutely outstanding. It is a great place to spend some time, something interesting for people of the entire family. And again, this is a little undiscovered place in Chester County, which we highly recommend. So, Chuck, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
For being with us today. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll be talking with Noah Lewis, who does the Ned Hector character at many of the reenactments around the area. Thank you all for joining us for Living History.